Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ. Down there in DeKalb, Georgia, my good friend, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Doing well, sir. It's just a another good weekend. The Bravos got the dub on Sunday to win the series. Marcell Ozuna, yes. One strike away from losing the game, hit three-run bomb, but yeah, man, it was a good weekend. It's nice spring games to go through. Like, get a little taste of college football. That's not the real thing, but get a little taste.
It was fun. I mean, I went to the Masters on Friday, raced back to Knoxville for the spring game.
How was that? How was the Masters?
Masters is cool. Have you
first
been?
First time?
Yes, this is my first time.
No, I've never been to Augusta.
It's I don't even know if I've been to Augusta, like, outside of driving through it before I went on Friday. I don't think I've ever had a reason to, like, stop. It is kind of wild.
Been through Augusta, but yeah, like, I've never been to the Augusta National, like the Masters.
Well, I mean, I was just saying, like, Augusta in general. Like, I was like, even as a local Georgia guy, like, I've been to a lot of places, and I mean, just, I don't think I ever had a reason to be in Augusta before, but it was fun. I mean, it was great weather. It was an experience that was pretty wild. I told my dad, it was like the Masters is run like the most efficient Chick-fil-A in the world, where it's just, you would think the lines would overwhelm, and their policy, the no phone policy, and people just kind of go with it and they know what to do. And they're just pushing through. The lines are really long. You're like, uh-oh. And they just move through, like, everything, food, drinks, the lines to get in, the lines to the gift shop, the lines that just, like, move around. Like, it's packed to the gills, but it doesn't feel packed to the gills, if that makes sense. Like, you're just moving around. It's just, it all runs so smoothly. Everybody's happy to be there. I was texting my cousin about this, where I'm like, I've never seen so many grown men just, like, smiling ear to ear and just, like, completely overwhelmed with happiness. Like, it's kind of wild. I've never seen that many just really not a care in the world, happy adult men, just like a kid in the candy store, just overwhelmed with how exciting it was. But it was a really cool experience. And I mean, getting to see Tiger up close was wild, to just see the fanfare that he brings to the hole. And he was like, what, 20 feet from me at one point. You just see him, and it's just kind of wild, because he just walks just a bigger than life figure. And the way people, like, just, I don't know how to explain it until you stand next to him or you're, like, really close by. But I highly encourage folks, before he retires, whenever that is, be around Tiger Woods for, like, a second at one of these events, because it's weird. It's one of those things where everybody kind of stops what they're doing, and you can tell, like, it swarmed and all these people were following him throughout the day. But like, you walk and he just has this like emperor walk, like the Star Wars Darth Vader type deal. And it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but it was one of the more all time wild moments I've ever, I've been to a lot of different sporting events over the years. And that was one of them. I mean, it was just such a gorgeous course. The grass is perfect. Food's good. Drinks are good. And it was a fun day, man. It's a really, really nice time. The NOFA, like, you're just kind of isolated, and it just feels nice. Like, it just feels like a really nice vacation day and just not a worry in the world. And it was just it was fun to see a lot of the world's best golfers tee it up and head around, and just some of the crazy talents. Like, Freddie Couples had this crazy shot where we were watching the 13th hole and he had fun with it, and that was cool. But yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. And it was if that was my only time, hey, it was a fun bucket list check off, and getting to do it with my dad was a fun time.
Seeing big time stars like that is definitely like some bucket list stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I at least saw Kobe play the Hawks one time. Like, I saw LeBron play when his original time in Cleveland play at Atlanta. It's like, you need to see the Kobe one was crazy, because he was like, I think he dropped like 20 in the third quarter or something, and like whole place is chanting MVP. I'm like, are we in Atlanta right now? What is happening? It felt like we were in Los Angeles. But yeah, that's pretty awesome, man. The one thing that gets me, we got to go back to, I'm not big social media guy posting on my phone. I live in the moment, you know, when I'm in a social gathering, I'm usually not texting people back and stuff. But the no phone thing, I feel like that would rattle me. It's like, I know a golf round is like 4 hours. I guess is it 4 hours when it's pro, or does the commercial slow things
down?
Well,
remember, they don't all start together. So they go, like, some people start at 8 a.m., some people start at 10, some people start at 12. So it's like going on throughout the whole day. So like,
So you'd be there for 8-10 hours or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This could be a whole like 8 a.m. to like 7 p.m. type day.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense then. Man, that's a full day. I just don't like golf that much. Like, it would be lost on me. I'm sure if I went to Augusta, I mean, I've been to, like, obviously I worked at a golf course, even though I'm not a golfer. I've been to East Lake, and that was like, yeah, this is the nicest course I've ever been to. But I feel like I would know it's super nice, but I feel like it would just be lost on me, because I don't know. I'm just not a big golfer.
You say that, but I'm telling you, like, you don't have to be a big golfer. Like, I think you're just, because you just see them hit it, and you see what it takes to just hit these crazy putts and what all goes into it, and just what separates them from just your average Joe. And I don't know, it's just kind of cool, like, to see them have, like, it's kind of wild to have this gaze on you as you're like competing in the biggest tournament in the world for your sport, and you just have these eyeballs on you, and you know you're playing. Like, it's just, I don't know, I'm just fascinated by, like, even if you're not the biggest golf fan, like, you're fascinated by all the different competing things going on, and just the competition aspect of it, and all the just the planning and the strategy involved with knowing what club to use at any given moment, knowing the slopes, knowing basically the geometry of the course, and like whether or not to lay it up. So we were at the 13th and 14th hole for a lot of it, and like, a lot of guys laid up, and that was like one of those things. The strategy is like, do you want to overcompensate and maybe hit it, and then you're gonna have to do a drop because it's gonna go in the water, or do you like it? There's just a lot that goes into it that as you're watching throughout the day, it's fun to just kind of take note of who's doing what and who's rolling, and getting a good sense of like, I like where that guy's at, I like how he's doing blank. And I don't know, it's just fun, and you just don't really think about, I mean, it's time flies by. You would think that it might go slow because you don't have your phone, and if you're not seeing the scores, because that the only thing that bothered me was like, I wanted to keep up with like everybody else where I was, so I wouldn't even use my phone for like other stuff. I just wanted to kind of keep up with what I was watching and where people were scoreboard wise, because where we're at, we only like the scoreboard doesn't feature the whole, that like everybody, like this is not a practice round, so this is post cut and all that. And I would have liked to have seen a working list. So like, as I'm watching today and I can keep up with where everybody's at, like that would have been more fun to like kind of have a better sense of where things stood.
Yeah. Like when you go to like a music festival or something, there's like an app you can get for the festival. It's like, if you want to be at this show, this whatever venue, this artist, I would expect something like that. more at the Masters.
Well, they like, do have a little paper thing where it tells you where what holes people and what start time. Well, they tell you what start time, but they don't have like the update. So there's no like thing. That'd be cool though if they gave you this thing that gives you live updates, like a little your own personal phone for the day that only shows you the, or maybe like a little iPad that doesn't, I don't know, something to give you to keep up with what everybody's doing all day so that you can have a context for where things are at.
Yeah, I would like that, because that's one of the downsides of going to like a college football game is like you want to pick a week where this is one of the only good games. That's why going to those so many 3:30 games is so good, because that tends to be the only game on.
Yeah.
And then you can come check out the night game once that's over. But that I like to, I would think if I'm a big golf guy, I'd want to be keeping up with what's happening at the Masters. I clearly care about the Masters. I'm here.
Right. No. You're absolutely right. But it was a fun time regardless. I mean, Tennessee sweeps LSU over the weekend in baseball, as they will see they're at number four if they move up a little bit more, because Arkansas had a tough weekend against Alabama. They've been number one. So I'm curious where Tennessee might slide into after this weekend of college baseball. But spring game was a lot of fun as well. And we'll talk about the spring game here momentarily, Matt Green. But before we get into all that and more on this week's episode of A Pod Divided on the Chase Thomas Podcast, don't forget, folks, every single Sunday night, Monday morning for your podcast listening, Matt and I talk all things college football during the offseason, twice a week during the season. But yeah, every week, if you are already a subscriber and you haven't already done so, please make sure you hit that pause button right now and leave us a 5-star rating and write us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or however you are listening to this very show. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this very show continue to grow. You can also check us out on YouTube, full episodes, links, clips, all that good stuff, as we're right there at 2,000 subs on that front. So make sure you lock in and subscribe and like the video. And if you're watching here right now on YouTube, thanks. And make sure you give us a thumbs up and a comment in the comment section. And of course, if you ever want to get in touch with the show and ask us anything about college football each and every week, you can hit us up at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Matt Green, the Georgia Bulldogs, they had a dog bites this week. They had a spring game along with Tennessee up there in Athens, Georgia. What happened this weekend? What were your takeaways from Georgia's G-Day?
Well, you know, there's only so much you can take away from these spring games. You know, if the offense looks good, it's, well, is that because our DBs are bad? If the defense is doing well, is our offensive line bad? You know, so it's, you kind of got to figure out exactly what it means. But yeah, first team offense was red. First team defense was black. I think most people kind of coming out of it would say the defense probably had the better day in the scrimmage. You had C.J. Allen and Mykael Williams both get intercept Carson Beck in this one. But one of the things I took away, I think Georgia's running game is going to be more explosive in 2024 than it was in 2023. And that's probably not surprising to a lot of people, adding Trevor Etienne. But even Andrew Paul had a couple of nice runs in this game. And Roderick Robinson, I think I'm sold on Roderick Robinson. This guy, you know, we saw him play a little bit last year, number zero, the UCLA commit for a while, had a monster senior season in high school, then flipped to Georgia. This dude's listed at 6 feet, 240 as a true freshman and with like zero body fat. Like, this guy is a beast. So I'm really curious to see what he can do as a sophomore. He was one of the only freshmen, one of the few underclassmen that actually played outside of Kendall Milton and Dejon Edwards a year ago. So I'm really excited to see what Roderick Robinson can do, but Trevor Etienne definitely showed, like, he looks like the best back on Georgia. A couple explosive runs in this one. So I think for the running game, I think Georgia fans, and I think their Georgia fans just typically don't worry about the running game. Last year is probably, in just terms of raw talent, you know, probably one of your least talented running back groups ever. And Georgia's running game was fine, you know, all year. But you know, if you get back to having some of those Sony Michels and DeAndre Swifts and Nick Chubbs and Gurleys of the world, it can be that much more dangerous. And obviously, seeing how good James Cook is as a second-year player in the NFL. But also, the transfer wide receivers, I think, is what a lot of people wanted to see. I think a lot of people want to see Gunnar Stockton kind of, like, before I get to the receivers, kind of take control of, like, he's like the true number two on the team. And, you know, I think he's still, he looks fine. I think these type of settings aren't the best for him. It's kind of like Jalen Milroe. Like, we can get to Alabama spring game later, but a guy who's got a ability to make some plays with his legs, like, if it's not live motion, you're kind of never seeing exactly what he's truly capable of. So Stockton, I think he is the clear number two, and Puglisi, the true freshman, has been injured, I think, the last like few weeks. So he didn't play in the spring game. So I think you look at some of these transfer wide receivers. Colby Young is the one that everybody's talking about, the transfer from Miami. He just looks real solid. Like, he had a catch that reminded me of like a Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint catch. And it's just, Roseme, Jack Saint wasn't like a superstar or anything, but he was a solid blocker, and he would just make those like tough contested catches. And that's what George is going to have to do. I think that's going to be the biggest question mark on George's entire team, is that wide receiver tight end group. Not because they don't have talent, but just, we might be coming off the most talented group we've ever seen. And not necessarily the deepest, but in terms of Brock Bowers, I think is probably the second best Georgia offensive player of my lifetime, behind like Todd Gurley. Like, I mean, he was just, you know, elite when you see it. And then Ladd McConkey, we talked about, he's not really underrated anymore. People give him respect for how good of a wide receiver he was. So, and then I obviously said Roseme, Jack Saint. So to lose two of like the best playmakers Georgia's had, maybe of the entire Kirby Smart era, if you really think about it, in terms of pass catchers, obviously George Pickens probably has more talent than Ladd McConkey, but Bowers and McConkey are right there as far as the two most talented pass catchers Kirby Smart has had. So that's going to be a big area of, you know, just a question mark. But I think Georgia with Dominic Lovett, I don't know if you see that touchdown catch Dominic Lovett caught. It was like Tyrone Prothrow style behind the DB.
Friend of the pod and coworker Graham Coffey of TPL Georgia got good video of that up close from today. So yeah, I saw it. It was pretty wild catch.
But yeah, so I think Georgia's receiver group with Dominic Lovett, with Dylan Bell, with like we said, with Colby Young stepping in. Obviously, you still have a London Humphreys and Michael Jackson. What, Michael Jackson Jr., Michael Jackson III from USC. So just a lot of bodies in that room. And then, you know, obviously Arian Smith is a guy that's also been, everyone wants to break out. But the biggest question marks on Georgia's team, I think, this year are that wide receiver group. And then on defense, I think it's got to be the defensive back room. But, you know, like I said, kind of along with those running backs, when you got a Kirby Smart coach team, you're just not really worried about the defensive backs. Like, yeah, they might not be superstars if it's like a transition year, but it's like, you just know you're going to get a certain level of play from the defensive backs. One thing I took away was, so the first team defense is black, and Dalen Everett was on the black team. Julian Humphreys and Daniel Harris, who I think are perceived to be the number two and number three corners, both played for both teams. So that, I think that shows they're not necessarily sold on that position. So my hot take for you right here, sir: Ellis Robinson IV will start multiple games for Georgia in 2024, in my opinion. I think, and it's no disrespect to Daniel Harris or Julian Humphrey, but Ellis Robinson, like, and he didn't like show out or do anything amazing in the spring game, but the way this guy looks, the way he fits in his uniform, like, some people have this guy as the number one player in the country coming out of high school. It's just hard to keep those guys off of the field, because you can get a lot of big time freshmen, five stars coming into, like, Smile Mundin's a one that comes out to mind, that, like, this guy walks on the field in the spring game, you're like, oh wow, his body is not ready for Georgia. And then a year or two later, Smile Mondin's just an absolute freak, and he's been in that strength and conditioning program for a couple years. Like, I think you'll see a multiple freshman linebackers in this class that they got a little bit of weight to put on, but they're just long athletes. Ellis Robinson looks like he's got an SEC body right now. So this guy's coming in as a true freshman, and that's usually the thing I notice most is like the lack of like muscle definition in the arms. It's like, okay, this guy is still a senior high schooler basically. And he should still be a high schooler in April if he was graduating like a normal student. But so I think Ellis Robinson is one that I just, and it's not like a hot take or anything. He's obviously a five-star. Everyone knows about him, but I think you're going to see him emerge as the season comes along.
Interesting. So do you think he starts against Clemson or no?
I don't think he starts the opener, and maybe it's, you know, maybe the other guys are playing so well, he never gets a shot, but I think that Dalen Everett, I mean, he's the proven commodity right now, and he's far from proven. He was basically the one weak spot in Georgia's secondary a year ago. He was the guy that teams picked on. And you've seen guys that, like a Tyson Campbell, the same thing, be the guy that got picked on and emerge as being a borderline first round pick. So, you know, that's going to happen when you play at a young age. But I think that that other DB spot still hasn't been locked up really yet. So I think that's just going to, it's going to be hard to keep a guy that talented off the field.
I like it. Speaking of breakouts and guys who might end up starting and having a big breakout, one of the guys, you were talking about the receivers and Colby Young and replacing Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers. And it's, we've talked about this offseason that what's interesting about Georgia in a lot of ways this year is that, really the last 2 years, is they are addressing their wide receiver room through the portal, because Bowers, Ladd, and Pickens and guys like that before them were all in-house guys. Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint. Now they're really transfer heavy with Dominic Lubbock, with London Humphreys, and with Ra-Ra Thomas. They're very transfer heavy, which is okay, but it also makes it interesting that they built their entire room now really through the portal. But there is one exception, and 247 did a college breakout player candidate list for 2024, and one of the names on the list, Arian Smith. When you saw that, Matt Green, and based on what you saw at G-Day, and when you think about where the pecking order is right now for Georgia's wide receiver room, are you buying, because I feel like the last three offseasons, it's been kind of like Arian Smith coming out party, and this is the year Arian Smith breaks out. Like, are you still falling into that line of thinking, or are you kind of like, I don't know if I can still just put him in as a breakout candidate based on what we've seen through the first couple of years here?
I mean, I guess it depends on what do we call a breakout for Arian Smith. Like, I mean, this guy's got like 20 career catches. So he averages like 30 yards a catch. So he's come into some big game, like outside of that Ohio State game where he's got like 120 something yards and a touchdown. Like he really hasn't had many big games. Like he's good for a 50 yard catch here and there. You know, I don't know. It's hard to, we were just talking about the receiver room. So it's not like it's a bunch of proven commodities, but it feels like he's behind like almost all of those names that I mentioned. Like he feels like the perfect like fifth or sixth weapon. Like if that's what he's going to be for Georgia, like that's really dangerous, because he's maybe the fastest player in college football just in terms of straight line speed, and that's what he does. When they bring him in there, they throw it to him deep, and he's caught a bunch of deep balls and some in some big games. So I don't know, it's hard for me to see with a guy like Dominic Lovett, he's going to get a lot of catches. A guy like Dylan Bell is going to be a huge part of this offense this year. We haven't even mentioned the tight ends really with Oscar Delp. I think he'll be a good tight end, but he's just not going to be Brock Bowers. I think there's a lot of good playmakers on this team that Arian Smith is kind of a cherry on top. So I don't even know if I can, and obviously the injuries, you can't really ignore the injuries. Like I don't want to like, you know, ridicule the kid for getting injured a bunch, but it's, you know, you just can't, after a while, you know, you're talking about Jacob DeGrom in the major leagues. Like, yeah, it's cool how good you are, but we know you're not going to pitch a full season, and we have to recalibrate for that. And Arian Smith has kind of proven to this point that he can't stay healthy. You know, some of that could be bad luck. These things happen, but if Georgia gets production from Arian Smith, I think it's going to be like a cherry on top type of production, that it's going to make them that much deeper. I don't see any scenario where he's like the second or third leading receiver on this team.
Interesting. If he's one of the, to flip it, if he is one of the breakout guys for them, does that mean Georgia's having a good year, or does that mean things went awry for a lot of the guys that they were expecting to count on, and that means Georgia's passing game's actually not been what was expected coming into the year?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like, could he have his Isaiah McKenzie season, where McKenzie actually led? He was actually Georgia's true number one option, even though he's like a return specialist.
Yeah,
it's probably not a good thing if he's leading us in receiving. But I don't know. I guess he's got the ability to be a guy who takes the top off a defense. So it's hard to see it being a bad thing if Aaron Smith is one of Georgia's go to guys in the offense, because you are losing a couple of go-to guys in Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. So I just, maybe it's a scenario of a bunch of injuries. Like, that's like worst case scenario, that he's still around because of a bunch of injuries or something like that. But they just seem too deep for him to, for it to be a bad thing. If he does have this breakout year where he's got 40, 50 catches and 8-9 touchdowns, like, it's hard to see that as a bad thing in any way. I can't put that on him. I think if he's got 15-20 catches and a couple 50 yard bombs, like, that's kind of the best thing you can expect from Arian Smith. But if I'm putting a breakout player like on this national list from Georgia, it's Jalen Walker defensively. 100%. I'm the head of the Jalen Walker fan club. Like, this man should have played more than he did. He's a disruptor off the edge, and that's something that Georgia lacked a year ago. He's an inside linebacker, like, by trade, but I think he's just too good of an athlete. Kind of like when Channing Tindall was at Georgia as the third linebacker, he was so good at blitzing. You played all three of those guys at the same time. So I think Jalen Walker is just a ridiculous athlete and a disruptive, like, just a disruptive player of the backfield that you have to get on the field.
Interesting.
And the other thing to watch for too, the last thing I'll say about Georgia is Mykel Williams is moving like to outside linebacker. So, you know, we'll see. He always kind of reminded me more of a Trayvon Walker, kind of that hybrid, just really good athlete. But Trayvon Walker was on the defensive line with his hand in the dirt more times than not. So it'll be interesting to see Mykel Williams and if he's in that more of like a pass rusher role this season.
Interesting. I like it. A-Day Panic here, Matt Green. So I was looking through Alabama's 247 site and looking at their depth chart, because like Milroe's numbers did not pop. He had a one big deep bomb and that was it, but I think he was like 3 for 9 overall. It wasn't the smoothest afternoon for Alabama's offense in Tuscaloosa on Saturday. But I was looking at this, I mean, would you, if you're an Alabama fan right now, kind of be panicking when you compound Milroe's performance in the spring game along with the real lack of depth at wide receiver at Alabama this year?
What's the question?
So when you look at Alabama's depth and the depth of the wide receiver position compounded with how Jalen Milroe performed at A-Day. So when you look at the depth chart coming out of that over there on 247, does that, if you're an Alabama fan, are you panicking over this potential combination where I don't think this is one of the weaker rooms, I think, in the SEC. They have some young talent like Ryan Williams, but counting on them right away is probably not the way to go. So when you look at it, I don't know. To me, this is one of those weird, like, you and I have shared our thoughts on Jalen Milroe and what he's going to ultimately be as a college quarterback. But I just think the combination I don't know. I think if I'm an Alabama fan, I'm a little nervous about year one for this offense and with Kalen DeBoer. Is that, like, I'm not saying 6-6 or anything, but I think this offense is going to struggle. And I don't think there's a lot of playmakers on the outside. I think when you look at this depth chart, to me, it's Justice Haynes and company. I think the run game will be their best friend this year, because I think they have a lot of talent at tailback. I just don't see the skill position guys out wide with this group, like Kobe Prentice in the slot. They just don't have, I mean, Isaiah Bond obviously goes to Texas in the portal, but I was looking through this and I was like, man, I don't know. Milroe didn't pop in the spring game, and I'm still kind of dubious on that front. And I don't know. I would be kind of nervous if I'm an Alabama fan right now.
Yeah, I mean, Bond and like Burton, they weren't even at the level. They were good players, but they weren't even at the level that Bama was, like, you know, producing first round pick after first round pick year in, year out. So I don't think the spring game. So I think this answer is two parted. Like, I think you should absolutely be concerned about the offense going into 2024. Like, this Nick Saban's not here. Like, I think you should be concerned about a lot of things because Nick Saban was Alabama football, so it's going to be different. But I think I don't think the spring game should have done anything to your level of concern. Like Jalen Milroe not being great in the spring game. Like, okay, that's kind of like I was saying with Stockton. Like, this dude is an athlete. Like, if you're not going to be full speed live hitting the quarterback, like, you're not going to be able to truly see what this guy can do. So we know he's a flawed passer. And I think that's why I worry about Alabama's ability, you know, to win a lot of games, win double digit games this year. But we were worried about them last year, and they found ways to win a lot of games, and their offense wasn't great a year ago, but they did find ways to win. So I think there's obviously a lot of question marks when you're just coming in from, when you're switching from Nick Saban to Kalen DeBoer. But I don't think the spring game specifically should have you like pressing the panic button.
I just think it's going to be, it's just wild because, like, Tennessee has got dudes everywhere. I mean, I think even Georgia has a lot of playmakers outside, even without Bowers and Ladd. Like, I think they have a lot of options. I just don't think Bama has a lot of options. I think Amari Jefferson and Ryan Williams are going to be good receivers down the road. I think they're actually more potential difference makers than they've had in recent years. I don't know if they get to the Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith range, but I think Ryan Williams definitely has that potential. I think Amari Jefferson potentially does as well. They're true freshmen. And I just look at this group. I think it's weak. I think this is one of the weakest playmaker groups that are going to start. Like, when they're in 11 personnel, they don't have a lot of guys that can scare you. And when you have someone who is as shaky as Milroe, it just kind of looks a little bit like last year's Tennessee team a little bit, where I don't know. I think they're going to be a run first team. And I think a lot of people are just going to assume that because it's Kalen DeBoer and what he's done at Washington and Fresno and company, that it's going to be a lot of downfield assault and this, that, and the other, and it's going to be pass, pass, pass. But to me, I just look at the depth chart, and I look at where the positions of strength on this team is going to be, and I just think it's a running back, man. Like, Justice Haynes and Jam Miller is going to be one of the best duos in the SEC this fall. Like, I just think that they are loaded at running back again.
I mean, those are pretty unproven guys as well, though.
But they're talented. Justin Haynes is going to be a dude. Like, I would be very surprised if Justin Haynes is not one of the best backs in the country very soon. I think Alabama's pretty loaded in that. I wouldn't bet against Justin Haynes.
And yeah, a coach's first job is to get the best out of the talent he has. Yeah. And so you're not going to have Jalen Milroe doing what Michael Penix did a year ago and just airing the ball out. That's just not his skill set. So you're going to run an offense that's designed around Jalen Milroe's legs. And so that's the first and foremost. But also, the portal is about to open back up. And I don't obviously know what's going to happen in the portal, but Alabama, I think you can make a safe assumption that they're going to be one of the more active teams in the portal. Like, their coach retired in January. They got poached for a month when they couldn't actually go get a bunch of players from other schools. So I think you're going to see Alabama make some moves in the portal. And, you know, with what Kalen DeBoer has done, there could definitely be some high profile receivers that could come in and make this group better from day one. But I think that's what it's going to take. I think they're going to have to make some moves in the portal.
Yeah, but spring guys just don't. I'm so curious because there's been people who have predicted that, like, this is going to be a crazy. I mean, we're taping this and it's now the 15th, so it's open. It's open season, Matt Green. We'll see if there's a lot of movement this time around. But we have not seen a lot of difference makers in the spring portal because you don't have much time. Like, you missed all of spring practice learning this offense or defense. And I mean, you saw Peyton Thorne come in as a spring transfer from Michigan State, and he struggled. I just think it's really hard for guys to get that acclimated and then be difference makers for their team. Like, it's just depth, I think, at this point, and like building for the following year if you're transferring the spring. And the other thing too is you can't transfer within the conference in the spring window, so it's not like they're gonna be able to pull from another SEC power this spring. So I don't know. I just I'm more dubious about the spring transfers than I think a lot of people are. I'm not expecting the fireworks that a lot of people are, and I also just don't know if that's the best team strategy, because these guys have not proven to be able to just acclimate and be ready to go and be difference makers for their team 3 months later.
Well, it might not be the most sustainable like thing to do, but you know, if you're trying to get, you know, warm bodies in there, you gotta get the guys you can get. I think Alabama, the fact that they had the bad timing of Saban retiring, like I think that right there alone, I would think would make them one of the more active teams. Michigan, like obviously in a similar position, but they just didn't have the same, you know, turnover that Alabama had since it was an internal hire. It felt like they kind of kept things on the same track.
Well, Alabama did pull a starting safety from Michigan in the portal.
That is true.
So, and he's going to be pretty good by all accounts. What is his name? Let me see here.
I don't know off the top of my
Keon
head.
Keon Sabb.
Yes.
Keon Sabb. So he's going to be a good player. Final thing here. I think you have a take on Ole Miss before we get into our theme of the night, sir.
Oh, yeah, man. I don't want to be the fun police here, especially, 30-something-year-old white guy over here. But what was that? I don't know if everyone saw this, but they had a 50-yard field to start with. Like, they had the legit painted end zones and everything, just stopped at the 45-yard line. And then they have the dunk contest. They got a Joey Chestnut with a hot dog eating contest. Like, they didn't have players doing a hot dog eating contest. Like, I'm confused. And then, like, yeah, the 50-yard field, it was like 71-70. Like, I don't want to be the fun police here, but that was the lamest thing I've ever seen. I'll be honest. Like, I watched this SEC Now, whatever the studio show SEC Network's got. And that was the lead spring game they talked about. Before they talked about Georgia, before they talked about Alabama, they talked about Ole Miss. So it's a success from that standpoint. That's exactly what they wanted to do. Turn the spring game into a party and we're all having fun. But it's like, we want to, the spring game is the diehards, man. Like, they might not be able to afford a game during the season. They want to come in the spring. They just want some sort of taste of football in their veins. Like, they want to come see some football. Did the people really, did they show out to see the football players dunk a basketball, like do a dunk contest? Did they come for Joey Chestnut? I just don't understand.
I mean, it's fine. I don't know. I think I would take. I mean, is the spring game even worth it, Matt Green? I mean, it's fine. I enjoyed watching Tennessee, and it's the last time I'll see Nico and company for a couple months, but I don't know. Like, if you want to do weird stuff, 7-on-7 at the 50, if you want to do Joey Chestnut or dunk contest.
7-on-7.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It didn't really move the needle for me. I'm like, that also kind of checks out. Lane Kiffin doing something different down there in Oxford. I don't know. It seemed like the players liked it. I mean, that's the main thing is, but also I think teams are just so wary of showing anything because it's broadcast on TV. They want to keep it as vanilla as possible because they don't want any new wrinkles they have getting out and showcasing like any red zone stuff, like any cool red zone plays. They don't want to do that. I don't know. I just feel like because everybody's so protective of what they're doing and who their new guys are and this, that, and the other, that they don't want to showcase too much and pop too much and make it too fun. So you might as well go the other way and like, all right, if we're not going to treat it, if we're going to be so super careful, we might as well just have fun with it and make this just a weird experience altogether. I don't know.
Yeah, obviously the spring football game isn't the biggest deal or anything like that, but I don't know, the 7-on-7 thing, I feel like that just, what message are we sending here? We're sending a message that Ole Miss is a finesse team. They don't have it in the trenches. The guys in the trenches, they don't even need to play in the spring game. What is that? I feel like, I don't know, it feels symbolic, like a Lane Kiffin coach team. Like, they just decided like not even to throw the defense out there. We're just going to run offensive drills on air. Like, I don't know. It's something about like just playing football without the offensive and defensive lines. It's just like, you're not playing football. Do these fans really want to come see some flag football? Like, 7-on, they might have well just watched a high school tournament, right? The 7-on-7 camp stuff. Like, I don't know. It didn't seem like a spring game to me. I definitely don't understand the half field Like, I don't know. It just, I don't get what I would have said. What I would have done, we're just trying to make it fun here. You're going to do half the field. Paint the other half the same. Like, paint the other half like it's a football field. Get the fans out there. Let the fans run some routes, catch some balls in the end zone, do a touchdown dance, what you're trying to do. I don't know. But I respect them for trying to be different, trying to be fun. But I'm like, oh, what are we doing? Slam dunk contest during a spring game. Let's play some foosball. I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit.
Wow. That was some get off my lawn stuff right there, Matt Green.
It was.
I saw it. It didn't move the needle for me. I just kept it moving. And Matt Green was like, this ruined my Saturday. This was too much for me.
I won't be able to enjoy anything the rest of the weekend.
Goodness gracious. Well, Matt Green, we have our theme here as we continue on these weekly shows. Next team to win their first national championship, sir. So we did longest drought last week. And who might break that drought sooner rather than later. Now it's just like, who do you think will ultimately win their first national title with the college football playoff expanding to 12 and then probably 14 sooner rather than later? But we have some names here on our 10 apiece that we thought would be fun to cross talk about here. A lot of crossover between the two, but I think we're on the same page here in terms of number one. And we Oh, go ahead.
Before we get into it, let's add some context here. Mm-hmm. So the first team to win their national championship, this does not mean that this team is currently close to winning a national championship.
Yes.
Right? The last team that won their first national championship was Florida in 1996. Like, that's mm-hmm. almost 30 years ago. So after that, I don't know. Should I pose that as a trivia question? You want to guess? I have a couple. There's four in my lifetime that have happened. I guess three in your lifetime, since I'm a little older than you. But so you want to guess? You may tell you.
You can just tell me.
The last one before that was Florida State in 1993 was their first national title. Then Washington in 91, and then Colorado split the championship in 90. Like, that's what we're talking about. You go a little further, like BYU 84, Miami in 83. Like, that's the last six. So the last six teams to win their first national championship was in the last like 40 years. So this might not happen in the next decade, but I think there's one candidate that's definitely stronger than the rest of the list.
Yeah, I definitely think there's one candidate that stands out. And I think we should talk about them first, Matt Green. The Oregon Ducks, I think, is the obvious answer here, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they've played for two national titles in the last like 15 years. Like, their coach just turned down the opportunity to go to Alabama. Like, we know about the Nike money. Like, Oregon is in a position like they should be. The Big Ten thing is the ultimate wild card, because they could just come into the Big Ten and now they're the fourth best team year in and year out, because Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State are on a level above everybody else. Who knows? Maybe that's possible. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But the Big Ten has been consistently stronger than the Pac-12 for our entire lifetime, essentially. Like, this past year, maybe the Pac-12 was better, but that's the one question mark is not necessarily knowing how they're going to do in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think one of the best indicators, I mean, right now Vegas has them as the co-favorites at the Ohio State. Their first year in, Dan Lanning's recruited extremely well. He's hired extremely well on both sides of the ball. They're loaded at quarterback. That's also going to be a big thing with Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore. That's going to be a big part of being able to win a title, as we saw with Marcus Mariota and guys that have gotten close, like Justin Herbert. Obviously, we've seen Heisman NFL type quarterbacks pass through Oregon, which is going to be a part of it. But it's also like the NIL aspect of it with Phil Knight and company. Do you have the person? Do you have the money? Do you have funding? Do you have the administration and everybody on the same page? And it seems like Oregon is a well-running machine all across the board. I mean, they are in the top 15 in blue chip ratio going into this year, so they will be one of the teams that can win a title based on their personnel. I don't know. I think it does feel like, to me, and this is something we could probably pose for a lot of these, I think when we look at who could actually be that first team since Florida, I think Oregon is the obvious answer here. But I do think, I mean, do you see it happening? Do you think that they are in the position to break through and win three or four straight games? And that includes beating some SEC teams in the process. I mean, do you think they are Dan Lanning dependent, or do you think that Oregon has built itself up enough now where regardless of who's coaching, it's one of the premier jobs in the sport and they're going to find their way? Cause that's something I think about with, I mean, Mario Cristobal, Mario Taggart and different guys where it's like, are we sure? Like they could be a coach away from kind of sliding back a little bit. Or is it just such a well-run machine and operation now that Oregon's brand is one of the best in college football now?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's coach dependent. Like we're talking about what they are right now with Dan Lanning of being like a preseason favorite in the Big Ten, being like a preseason top five team probably coming into next year. Like, and Chip Kelly is the one that went to two national championships. So they have done it under multiple coaches. Oh man, who was it? Bilotti? Was that the guy with Joey Harrington back then? Like, so yeah. they've been good for like basically the last 20 years or so. They've been a good college football program. I feel like as far as the West Coast goes, even though Washington did just play for a national title last year, like I feel like they surpassed like USC's brand on the West Coast in a way. Like it feels like they recruit nationally to the West Coast better, as good, if not better than USC. And, you know, maybe that's going to change now with Lincoln Riley once he gets his thing going. But I don't know. It feels like Oregon's brand is just so strong nationally that it doesn't have to be Dan Lanning in the next 5 years wins a title at Oregon or they're never going to win one. Like, I think you could see the next guy, because like we said, Florida 96 was the last time this happened. They might have a window, but they just feel like the best program in the country, really, that has never won a national championship.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll end on these. Let's do a prediction. In the next 10 years, Oregon wins a national.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Title.
10 years. I feel like they could win one in the next 10 years. I'll say yes.
Okay. I'm going to say no. But I do think they play in a national title game. At least one. I think they play in at least one, but I don't think they get where. Somebody we both have on our list, but I have a little bit higher than you here, Matt Green. The Missouri Tigers. I think they have the second best of anyone right now in winning a national title for the first time right now. Why are you less optimistic about the Tigers?
There's three reasons to be to not even have Missouri on this list. Obviously, I have them at 9 out of our top 10. It's three letters, I should say. SEC. That's the reason. Like, we were talking about Tennessee last week on the show, them, you know, ending their drought, or Florida. And like, we're talking about those being like, I don't know, like at best sixth or seventh in the conference or something right now. Like, you're talking about Auburn potentially being like preseason 8th or 9th in the SEC going into next year. Like, the SEC is just so loaded right now. It's hard to see Missouri. I feel like they're going to be one of the bigger, what's the opposite of beneficiary? They're going to be one of the bigger losers from the SEC expansion, because especially the SEC East, like Georgia has had their own criticisms of, oh yeah, they're just beating up a bad SEC East, but they're not as good as some years as the two best teams in the SEC West, right? Like there was an argument a lot of years about that. Like that goes even more so to Missouri. Like they're also playing a weaker SEC East schedule and having Arkansas as your locked rival. Like it's not exactly a gauntlet and they're not playing anyone out of conference. And we've talked about that. Like Missouri's had very few Power Five matchups out of conference. They did beat Kansas State a year ago, but they, if you look in recent history, they haven't had many of those. It's been a lot of four cupcake type of non-conference schedules for them. So with just how much more difficult the schedule is going to be, I know Missouri, the NIL stuff is good. Like that's definitely going to help their recruiting and everything. And it was, what, 2007, the last time that they were in a position to kind of compete for a national title. I guess you give them 2013. If they beat Auburn in that SEC championship, they might go to the national title game. They were like top four, top five at that point. So it's been a decade, I guess, since they kind of contended for a national title. But I don't know. In how loaded the SEC is going to be, it's hard to see Missouri being in the top half of the conference most years.
Yeah, I think they are in the best position they've been in a long time, Matt Green. I think there is a lot of talent in the Show Me State, I think is what Missouri is.
Yeah.
They just beat out Georgia for a quarterback Georgia wanted, and what, Matt Zollers? Is it Zoller? Zollers? Four-star quarterback.
Yeah.
I think that's I don't remember if it's Zollers or Zoller. And he's a super talented kid. He's one of the top five in the class with George McIntyre, who's been to Tennessee. So that's a big win. You get Williams Winery, who you beat Georgia out for on the defensive line.
Yeah, I was
going
to say him. That's the legit one.
They may have the best receiver in the conference in Luther Burden. They've had a lot of great receivers come out of the state of Missouri. They have their five stars in the state. I think it's a different kind of era. I mean, we've seen them be number one before in the Chase Daniel, Gary Pinkel era. I understand it's going to be hard in the SEC and with what they're dealing with, but the SEC schedule is going to rotate. It's not like they're going to have to get through the Georgias and the Bamas of the world every single year. I think there's a chance that they could be in the top 15 in blue chip ratio some years. I think based on how the NIL structure has worked, how Eli Drinkwitz has built a staff, I think he's done a really good job of building Mizzou up. I think he's really transitioned into a good CEO coach really well. He hires well. I think they have some top end talent, and I think they have difference maker type talents. And I think if you put this Mizzou team, especially this year's Mizzou team, or even last year's, I mean, look at it last year, Matt Green. I mean, they were one of the three best teams in the SEC last year. And I mean, we'll see what they look like with Texas and Oklahoma coming in, but I understand the concern about the SEC factor to it, but in a 12-14 team playoff, I think Mizzou, if they have a 10-2 type of year where they, like a year ago, with how much success the SEC has had in the college football playoff to this point, if they're one of the four teams that find their way in one year, I think there's absolutely a path to Mizzou if they have the right quarterback and the right kind of talent that they actually win their first national title. I think of all the ones that we look outside of Oregon, I think they have the second best opportunity right now based on where the program's at.
So is this a Eli Drinkwitz specific prediction? Like is it got to be Eli Drinkwitz, or this could be in the future? You just like where Missouri is.
I don't think it's Eli dependent.
You were talking about them like right now, like they have a window, and I think right now they might have a window, but it's like, what is their ceiling really? And because I was talking about the schedule, like as much as the going away from the East hurts their schedule or will most likely improve their schedule, they do lose Georgia every year. So that is an advantage of this new schedule. So they don't have to play Georgia in 2024. But I don't know. It's hard for me to see like this, because this is a wild, wild west of NIL right now. And I don't think this advantage that the state of Missouri has on NIL, I don't think that's going to last very long. I think you're going to see, for one, probably more states pass something like this, because that's what our politicians really care about is their college football programs. And they don't want to see a team get outbid for talent. But there's just going to be more. There's already, we're talking super leagues and different things being rumored. I think there is a you know, an appetite for getting some sort of regulation, some sort of universal rules across the board. So I don't know that they'll have this NIL advantage for too long. And they're probably one of the better programs on this list, but I tend to think that 2023 is going to be the best it ever gets for Eli Drinkwitz.
Interesting. I don't know. I like the talent and I like Kirby Moore. I think a lot of it's going to be how long can he keep Kirby Moore, because he had that offense cooking. We'll see how their replacement for Brian Baker works as he went on to LSU. But I don't know. The money's there. I think there's a lot of buy-in. They just got a huge like donation, if you remember, this spring from some donors. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of momentum all across the board to make Missouri one of the best programs in the SEC right now.
Well, let me correct myself. I'll say 2023, 2024 could be as good as it gets for Eli Drinkwitz, because I think right now they do have some solid momentum. I just don't know that they can consistently be this good. So like you look at their schedule this year, like, you know, you get at Alabama next year. Like, obviously that's never a good thing, but maybe that's the best time to ever play at Alabama when they're in year one of a transition year. So, you know, maybe they find a way to navigate this schedule this year, and maybe they do have a window right now, but they kind of feel like they're in that are they as good of a program as Ole Miss? Because Ole Miss, yes, feels like they're in a window, and theirs feels a lot more legit, kind of like achievable to me than Missouri's.
I think Ole Miss is more Lane Kiffin dependent than Mizzou is.
That is definitely dependent.
So I think Ole Miss could fall quickly without Lane Kiffin. I think Mizzou is pretty solid with where they're at and on and off the field. I'd probably say like Ole Miss, I think, has more upside this year. And I would bet on Ole Miss to have a better year than Mizzou this year. But I still like where Mizzou is football wise across the board more than Ole Miss.
Interesting.
Matt Green. Let's throw Louisville. I have Louisville 3 for me. You have Louisville 6. Why are you lower on Louisville than myself?
Well, I think for one, you're just you're the head of the Brom fan club, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. You may be the long lost Brom son for all we know. But no, you're just definitely higher on Louisville than I am. I'm really, it's like we're double counting Louisville's 2023 season, in my opinion. It's like when you rank a team in the preseason and then, you know, it kind of becomes they were this good because they ranked this in the preseason. Like, well, they were ranked that in the preseason by you. We still don't know how good they are. It kind of feels like a situation like that with Louisville, where like this schedule is really weak. Louisville could have a really good season, and then they did, and it's like, well, did they have a good season because they were a good team, or did they just capitalize on that weak schedule that you projected them to have? So I think 2024 is a very important season for Louisville. Like, when that schedule kind of comes back to normal, like, can they repeat what they did? And obviously it was just year one of Brom. So there's a lot of guys that improve in year two, but I don't know. I'm still in a wait and see approach from Louisville, but yeah, I mean, with what Petrino did in the 2000s, like, they weren't in the ACC at that time. So, you know, that's a little, goes with a grain of salt. But, you know, they were a team that was consistently top 10, top 15 for several years. So I think they have the ability to be like, you know, a good program, to be a team that can get in a couple playoffs. It's just hard for me to see them like actually competing for a national title anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, they're definitely not the favorites for me, but like, Lamar Jackson exists. We've seen this team and this university pull off Heisman-type quarterbacks. We have, and that's going to be part of it. Like, that's something I look for when I'm looking at which team wins their first national title in this new age, is that, like, you're not going to have the talent advantage in most of these. You need a difference maker, and it's got to be quarterback in today's game. So, have I seen this franchise or this university acquire and develop Heisman type quarterbacks in the past? Yes. Have I seen electric offenses? I think it's going to be partly that as well, where you're going to need to be a top 10 offense that year that you're going to do it. And I see Jeff Brohm being someone who could build a top 10, top five scoring offense at Louisville. I think that's very possible. I look at the schedule. I think right now they're in a good spot in the ACC. I mean, making the ACC title game right away. I like where Louisville can go as a with their NIL and with the university as a whole. I think there could be a lot of backing. I understand it's a basketball school first, but we've seen Louisville be really good, like you talked about with the best of the Petrino years. I just think Jeff Brohm is one of the 15 best coaches in the sport. I think they have an opportunity to be one of the 10 best offenses most years in the sport, depending on the kind of quarterback play. I mean, what he got last year out of Plummer was pretty remarkable for this Louisville. So this Louisville team, and I just think, look, give him a couple years and let's see where the talent's at. But I do think in terms of someone who could even go, like when you think TCU like run in the next couple years, I think Louisville is someone who I could definitely see making a TCU like run with if they get a quarterback who's able to just play at an all-time great heater type level that TCU had a couple years ago. So I don't think it's out of the question that Louisville makes a deep CFP run one year with some elite quarterback play and some really fun offensive production out of Jeff Brohm.
See, the one thing that you brought up, Lamar Jackson, I would almost say that's a point against Louisville. Like, they had Lamar Jackson and they couldn't win anything. Like, are they ever going to have a player better than Lamar Jackson? Like, that dude, that's not generational. Like, that's the best you're ever going to get. So it's hard to see them being better than that. It's also hard to see them being better than Bobby Petrino ever had them. Say what you want about Bobby Petrino, one of the best coaches in college football, like of the last 20 years, like this guy consistently won wherever he went. They have 12 seasons in the history of their program where they finished top 25, and Bobby Petrino was the head coach for five of those. So either the first time around or the second time around, like Bobby Petrino just, he basically had Louisville better than they've kind of ever been. So it's hard for me to see, you know, and obviously Jeff Brohm in year one is one of those. So he's right there, finished 19 a year ago. So we'll see. Jeff Brohm is a good coach, but I'm not sure Louisville has the ability to get to the mountaintop.
Fair enough, Matt Green. I have Baylor here at 4. You have Baylor at 8. It's interesting which ones we have flipped here. So Baylor, another one that you're not as high on as a possibility anytime soon.
Yeah, I think the Art Briles era happened. So, I mean, they did win a couple Big 12 championships, had a couple like top 10 finishes, at least one top 10 finish. And probably the better teams were after RG3 left, right? Obviously you had your Heisman guy, but Bryce Petty, was he the one that when they won the Big 12, they got greedy, tried to get TCU and Baylor in, and then neither of them got in. So that's the last time that Baylor, you know, really like truly like competed for a national title. Like, that's what are we talking, 2014, a decade ago? Like, Matt Rhule had a good team. You know, they were like, I think, top 10 going to that Sugar Bowl with Georgia. And they obviously won that great game with Oklahoma State a couple years ago with the goal line stand in the Big 12 championship. I don't know. It just feels like that's what I was going to say. In that era with Art Briles, that's Oklahoma and Texas era of Big 12 that you're surpassing those programs. Like, now if you're winning the Big 12, I'm just not sure what it means nationally. I don't know what the Big 12's ability to get talent consistently is. I think what was like, they had like one program finished like top 30 or top 25 in the most recent 24 in the team rankings on signing day. Like, they're not getting those high end. There's not a lot of teams that are getting that high end talent. So I think Baylor's probably, you know, one of the better teams are positioned in Texas, a way to get some recruits. But, you know, I don't know if I necessarily see them being better than like TCU moving forward. And I don't think they're the best title contender in the Big 12 moving forward to win their first national title, I should say.
No, and I just think part of it for me is that like you said, we've seen the Art Briles years and like what the mountaintop was. I think Matt Rhule, I want, that's a what if, like if Matt Rhule stays at Baylor for a while, like what does he get them to? I think that's a fair what if question for him, because it was brief before he goes to the Carolina Panthers. For me, I think part of this is like, look, SMU is back in a hurry. And they're right there at the top of the ACC, and what they did this past year, and Rhett Lashley's got that thing humming. Their boosters are motivated, and there's a lot of talent there. And you saw TCU. They just made a national championship game 2 years ago. I just think there's just so much talent in Texas and so much fan support. I mean, you look at Scott Drew, he turns down Kentucky to stay at Baylor. Baylor's basketball has obviously won a title of late. I think there is a lot of interest in Baylor football being one of the best, and I think there's an appetite. Now, I think this is a big year for Dave Aranda for a lot of reasons. We talked about their big transfer from Toledo that I'm excited about this fall, but I just think Baylor is like one of those teams, and this might actually just lead into the other conversation with another team on our list, is Houston, because it's kind of like the Florida thing, where I think there's more talent across the board in Texas, high school talent, that is. But with UCF being a Power 5 team, with FAU continuing to climb the ranks, like it's kind of made things harder for Florida State and Florida and Miami to kind of continue to dominate the state as they have in years past. And I wonder if there's enough to go around, because Texas and Texas A&M have become such juggernauts in the sport that Baylor can get there, or Houston can get there. So when you look at those two, I think this is an interesting lead in. Is like, if you had to bet in the next 10 years, who's more likely to have the more dominant program between Baylor and Houston, who would you lean towards, Matt Green?
I think I would definitely lean towards Baylor. Because obviously nationally, those two states, Texas and Florida, are getting poached. Everyone's coming in there to get talent too. So they're probably two of the harder states. As talented as they are, it's hard to keep all that talent. I tend to rank Baylor. I started to say when you first started talking, because you were saying, you know, who knows what happens if Matt Rhule leaves, but when is Baylor not going to be that? Like, when is Baylor not going to be, oh, you had 2 10-win seasons in a row at Baylor? You're going to go somewhere else now. You're going to jump to the NFL. You're going to get poached by a big time program because you've done it at Baylor. It feels like a stepping stone, more of a stepping stone of a program. So like, that was my first thought. But then I did think about Art Briles. Like, his tenure ended in, you know, controversy. So it's not like just a guy took Baylor as close as they could get and then he jumped ship, or, you know, then things went downhill because it had a peak. And then, so we don't actually know how good Art Briles could have kept this program going. And so there is some, and Matt Rhule is a guy who had the NFL experience. So you don't, and NFL isn't always an option for a college coach to jump. So that could be another kind of, well, this isn't a standard thing that's going to happen. A coach has success and jumps to the NFL. So there is some sense of like Baylor could be more of a destination job. Maybe they have to find their guy that played at Baylor that views it as a destination job or something. Like, not Sam Pittman didn't play at Arkansas, but he seems to think more highly of Arkansas than any other coach in the country. Like, it was a destination to him. So maybe you're just going to have to find that guy that doesn't look at Baylor as a stepping stone, because I worry that regardless of how good they could be, if a guy has 2 or 3 good years, he's just going to get plucked somewhere else.
Interesting. Well, this is a good one to feed into the Carolinas here, Matt Green. I have North Carolina and South Carolina at 6-7. You have North Carolina at number 2 and South Carolina all the way down at number 10 on your list. So we're both kind of pretty dubious of South Carolina's chances, but you're really in on North Carolina's potential here. And I don't know. I'm curious, why are you so confident, or not even confident, just why are you so optimistic about North Carolina's potential here as a national champion for the first time ever?
I would say the caveat is that this list a lot of good programs have won at least one national title, right? Mm-hmm. So Oregon is the clear and away number one here. And then you just look at like what it takes to get top talent. I think that's what it's, or what I should say, what it takes to win the national title is to get top talent. And there's not many programs on the on this list that actually can get top talent. It's not mm-hmm. that North Carolina's been a recruiting juggernaut by any means, but it feels like they have the ability, like if they get the right coach in, like you've seen the years, obviously I think they were cheating, right? There's some sort of scandal where they got a couple five stars and they were getting paid by an agent in Miami or something. That was probably a decade ago at this point, right? They've had their years where they pop up and they win some games. They compete in the ACC. They've probably underachieved more times than they've overachieved in recent years. But I think part of the underachieving is having some NFL talent, having some expectations. So they're already kind of in that upper tier in the ACC. It feels like they just need to have the right coach that can take them to the next level. Because like you look at some programs like North Carolina sneaky produces like a lot of prospects. Like Georgia has cleaned up in the state of North Carolina. I know Florida had a few
Tennessee
years
too.
Yeah, and I know Florida had some years where they were getting a lot of the best players out of North Carolina. Like, I think North Carolina actually does produce some talent, and it feels like they have the infrastructure, like they have the money. Like, people always talk about how, you know, in Chapel Hill kind of runs the ACC, that they kind of just throw their weight around and really make a lot of the decisions for the conference. So it feels like they're one of the power players, and we know about the basketball program and everything and just the athletic program in general. So I just feel like North Carolina just has a lot of the infrastructure that's like, it wouldn't surprise me if the right guy comes in and turns them into a perennial good program. And I don't think it's Mac Brown that's going to do that.
No, and I wonder too, but like then you go the other way. We've seen it, like the Fedora hire went awry pretty quickly. I don't know. We've seen a lot of bad North Carolina football over the years, Mac Green. And I just think like it's just be careful what you wish for, Tar Heel fans, about like ready to move on from the Mac Brown era. I don't know. The guy just wins a lot of football games. He hires pretty well, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Gene Chizik, probably not the best. But, I mean, Jeff Collins is a great hire. I think we both talked about that. I'm excited to see what he does as DC for UNC. But, I mean, the talent's there. And I think, like you alluded to here, there's a lot of talent in the state of North Carolina. The problem is I don't think they're ever going to be in the top 15 in the blue chip ratio. I think there's just those programs like Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, like other schools are just going to go into North Carolina and pick those guys. Like they're just going to pick them off. And I think it's going to be really hard for North Carolina to ever be able to withstand the competition from some of their biggest rivals all around the Southeast. So I don't know. I think it's possible, but I think that also feeds into South Carolina. I mean, when you have South Carolina low at this list, I mean, is there a path to you seeing South Carolina ever flipping the script and ever actually being a serious contender and ever actually getting to that point based on what their talent is in state? I mean, there is an appetite with NIL and with their fan base, and it's one of the toughest places to play in college football. Their fan base is active and energized. And I mean, we've seen obviously the women's basketball program dominate the sport of late. You've seen the baseball program have a lot of success over the years, so they have had success in the athletic department as a whole. I don't know, when you look at South Carolina, why are you less optimistic than North Carolina?
I think everything that I said about Missouri, I think just applies to South Carolina, that like Missouri's actually on a level where they're like, yeah, they finished top 10 a year ago. You're saying they're maybe the third best team in the SEC last year. Mm-hmm. Probably were the third best team in the SEC last year. Like South Carolina had Lou Holtz, who Hall of Fame coach, take over and make your program respectable. Then they had maybe one of the best coaches in SEC history with Steve Spurrier that actually won double digit games 4 years in a row. Like, it's hard to see if Steve Spurrier couldn't win a national title at South Carolina. I just don't know how anyone ever will. And I think that era was probably easier for someone like South Carolina because Clemson was not a national powerhouse. And, you know, you could argue Clemson is no longer a national powerhouse and maybe they're regressing back to the mean. But I feel like Clemson is still a superior football program to South Carolina, like head and shoulders. It's not even close. So, I mean, they've beaten South Carolina at least once. Did they beat them 2 years in a row? Or they beat Clemson? Did they beat them 2 years in a row?
That's a good question.
With Beamer? I feel like they did because they
I think that's right.
Clemson, right?
Well, I know they beat them 2 years ago because they beat Tennessee and Clemson to close
back to back. Yeah,
yeah.
So they've obviously gotten them a couple times, but and they're under Spurrier. There was what, like 6-7 years in a row. I think they beat them, but I don't know. It's just hard to see South Carolina. Like we were talking about, like stepping stone program with someone like Baylor. Like South Carolina can't even keep players. Like you know, they had a breakthrough like 2022 season and then just a bunch of key players bounced for the 2023 year. It's like, you can't even keep, like you can't even build off a young coach and we're like exceeding expectations early. I don't know. It just, South Carolina feels like they're in a just kind of an unwinnable like place kind of when it comes to, you know, truly competing nationally.
Yeah, I think your point about, like, you had one of the best coaches of all time. Like, I mean, he wasn't, I don't know, South Carolina fans can answer this better than I can. But, I mean, if you get Spurrier 10 years prior, like the 10 years prior Spurrier, do they still not compete the same level? Because, I mean, he was older. I mean, he was obviously retired, like, on the back end of his career as a head coach. Kind of like where, it's kind of like Mack Brown to me in a lot of ways. The Spurrier era at South Carolina reminds me a lot of the Mack Brown era part two. At North Carolina, where it's like they won a lot, they recruited better, it was pretty stable for the most part, but they never really felt like they were ever going to get over the hump and ever win big while both were there, and both were two national championship winning coaches. So I don't know.
Yeah, Butch Davis was the name. I forgot he was the one that got some big recruiting classes. See, I don't agree with that because I think with the Spurrier at South Carolina is the best it ever was and the best it ever will be. And I don't think North Carolina right now is the best there ever will be. I think Mack Brown, honestly, could be like, maybe he could be a little like mini Mark Richt, like kind of bring us stability. Like, hey, at worst, we're winning 8 games. All right. Like that's a pretty big floor to have at North Carolina. Obviously, he has the 6-7 season in there, but 3 of the 4 years, they've won 8 games, has a 9-game in there. Like, it feels like if they could just be, like, all of the years they've got around the top 10 at some point in the season. Maybe it's because they're overrated in the preseason some years. Maybe, like, they start hot and they get up around 10, around 8 or so. I think they even got into the top 5 at one point with Mack Brown. I don't think that's the best it can get for North Carolina. So maybe Mack Brown's the kind of like, you got to crawl before you can walk type of thing. And he can get North Carolina to a respectable level and then come in and get maybe the right guy can actually take them to kind of, I don't know, fulfilling the potential it seems like they have.
I like it.
But I will say South Carolina's got the second best stadium of these teams on the list. Oregon's probably the best home field advantage. But South Carolina's home field advantage is definitely one of the best on this list of teams that have never won it.
Well, the final two that we want to throw out here is like our main discourse here in terms of likely or could happen is one of those teams that I think has an underrated home atmosphere. It's the Wisconsin Badgers, Matt Green. But we have them flipped. I have Wisconsin and Utah at 9-10 for next team to win their first national championship, and you have Wisconsin at 3 and Utah at 4. Why are you more optimistic about the Utes and the Badgers?
I just think Wisconsin, like we're talking about Missouri, like the conference is improving. That's going to hurt them. Like the same can be said for Wisconsin. Like you could argue some of those years there was two teams in the East, in the Big Ten East, that were better than Wisconsin or something, but they went to the Big Ten championship because they won their weaker division. I'm sure a lot of Big Ten fans have made that argument some years, but Wisconsin did have their years with Russell Wilson, right? Where they went to the Rose Bowl. Like they've had their years under Barry Alvarez, their years under Illinois coach
Brett Bielema.
Like they've had their like consistent, like over the last like 20 years, like this program has finished like top 25 more years than not. So it feels like Wisconsin is just a very good program. And I'm a big Luke Fickell guy. I think a Luke Fickell, I think, carries this a lot because it's going, they are one of those teams that it's tough to see them getting to the mountaintop, period. They're just, it feels kind of like they have a ceiling as a program. But Luke Fickell, I mean, what he was able to do with Cincinnati, get them to the college football playoff, like that's one thing. But it's not like, I don't know, it's so much better than I feel like Scott Frost's like UCF teams were, because he was actually getting some legit NFL talent, like with Sauce Gardner and some of these, and Desmond Ridder, obviously, say what you want about him as a Falcon. He was a second round pick, right? Maybe he shouldn't have been, but he was they produced an NFL quarterback, mm-hmm. right? So Cincinnati, I think they had like 8 players drafted or something that year, like the third most in the draft that year. So I think Luke Fickell's shown that he can get talent at a place that hasn't always gotten the top end talent. And Wisconsin's, it just feels like it has a very, maybe the highest floor of any program on this whole list that, I mean, you know, they might not be competing for championships, but they're going to be producing NFL offensive linemen, and they're going to be having record-breaking running backs. Like this team, just regardless of who's the running back is, he seems to put up 1,800 yards and 20 touchdowns. Like, so I think Wisconsin is going to just, they are a consistent program. And I think this feels more coach dependent. Like Luke Fickell hangs around for a decade or something. Maybe he's the one that can, I guess I shouldn't say it's coach dependent, because they could be the next one 30 years down the list. This doesn't necessarily need to happen right now, but I think Luke Fickell could raise the ceiling for what Wisconsin's been in recent years.
Yeah, I don't think Wisconsin's even Luke Fickell dependent. I think they've proven for sure that they're, it's kind of funny. Like they have a lot of Oregon vibes to me. They just don't have the Oregon money. Like if Wisconsin had like some Oregon donors, like their own Phil Knight, I think Wisconsin could absolutely be one of those teams on my list, because I think they're close. And we've seen Wisconsin be one of the best college football programs, one of the 15 most consistent. And I think Utah is synonymous with that. But I don't see them. I think they're a big loser to me in the expanded Big Ten. And with the teams that have come in, I'm just not quite there with them ever getting over the hump and being one of those teams I could see making the run. But final one here, Matt Green.
Yeah,
the Utes.
Well, I have one more to say after the Utah Utes, because you left out a team that's accomplished something that most of the teams on this list haven't even accomplished. So I'll say Utah first. I guess Utah, I think we know. I think everything we said about Wisconsin kind of applies to Utah. And now that they're going to the Big 12, I almost don't know if that hurts them or helps them. Like I could see them being like a more consistent, like top 5 seed or something in the playoff because they're winning the Big 12. So, you know, maybe that raises the ceiling, but it's hard to see Utah getting that high end talent. Maybe it's going to take, you know, that generational quarterback or something that can raise the level. But Kyle Whittingham, it might be Kyle Whittingham dependent. Obviously, Urban Meyer was a damn good coach right before him. So they're coming off. The last two coaches they've had have been successes. But Whittingham has been the guy for 20-something years now. So it's hard to know what they're going to be after him. But yeah, Utah just feels like a consistent program. And, you know, winning the Big 12 consistently, if they can become that kind of top tier team in that conference, you know, I think that kind of positions you better. And maybe that's how you kind of see Baylor and I see Utah.
That's fair. Utah is just like, I mean, Cam Rising's healthy. It'll be fun this year. They might win the Big 12. I just don't think they're ever going to get I don't think they're ever going to have the recruits. Like they're just not on my list, because I just don't see a path of Utah ever having. Like Urban was the best case scenario. Like you had that kind of coach come in there and he was only there a couple of years. Kyle Whittingham is consistent. I think he's one of the best coaches we talked about in college football. I just, even with a Cam Rising type quarterback, I just don't think it's going to be enough for them to win 3 or 4 straight games against potentially Big Ten SEC programs in a college football playoff. I don't see a path for them. I see a path to multiple CFP appearances. I don't see a path to them ever actually running the gauntlet. And I also don't think the offense will ever be that kind of offense, right? Under Kyle Whittingham. Like, Urban and Alex Smith was fun. Like, you, if you're going to make that kind of run in the CFP, you just kind of, we've seen you need an electric offense. You need some, that kind of special quarterback play. And Utah is just physical, ground and pound, and they play a style.
Look, he's won the last three national titles, sir. It's teams that are defense first, that are physical up front. Like,
they are littered with 5 and 4 stars up front. Like, those teams can play that way and expect to win multiple games in a row that way. I don't think Utah can play that way and beat like Michigan State, Tennessee, and then Alabama and Georgia in succession. I don't think something like that is possible.
In what world is Wisconsin facing Michigan State in the first round of the playoffs?
Well, Utah. I mean, Utah. So
no, that, I don't know. Michigan State would be lucky to get in on this.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out. Like, that's a first round one where it's like, Jonathan Smith gets it going, I could see Michigan State.
Someone who pops up and has a good year and they're a 12, 11 seed. Yeah, no, that's fair. I had to throw out West Virginia because we saw an era with Rich Rod that's like, man, they're a Pat McAfee missed field goal away from playing for a national title back in 2007. But also, the only other team on this list that played for a national title in the BCS or playoff era is the Virginia Tech Hokies back in 1999. So there's not a lot of teams on this list that have even sniffed a national title. Like, I have North Carolina higher than some teams that actually have sniffed a national title. And Virginia Tech is one that, you know, it was Michael Vick, and maybe that's as good as it ever gets, but that wasn't as good as the program really ever got. Like, the Tyrod Taylor years, you know, they won the ACC like 3 or 4 years in a row early on when they moved over in the conference. So Virginia Tech is one of those programs. It feels like ancient history. Like, if you're talking to a college football fan, you know, 10, 15 years younger than us. But I think Virginia Tech, at least their ceiling, we know about the talent that Virginia kind of produces, you know, the Hampton, Virginia Beach area. Like, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Virginia Tech could get up here with some of these other programs.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm at the see it to believe it. I feel like West Virginia's got a long way to go, man. The mighty have fallen there. They're not on my watch.
80% of our list is not going to win a national title in the next 20 years, most likely. So
yeah,
we'll see. It's been a while since we had a first time national title winner.
Absolutely. Well, that's all I've got, Matt Green. It's a fun exercise.
Yeah, this was good stuff, man. Probably went longer than you wanted to, but yeah, it was good stuff.
No, it's all right, man. These offseason ones are good. This is fun.
But, spring games gave us a little content this weekend.
Absolutely. And we'll have some more stuff this week as we figure out our weekly different kind of theme episodes and all that good stuff. But stick around after this. We got Good Big Orange, the Good Big Orange Show, Tennessee Ball Sports Guys talking all things Tennessee after this one. So stick around on that front. But Matt Green, thank you as always, my friend. And I will talk to you next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.